There's something in sales that many people, when they first get into sales, and even veteran salespeople, are not properly equipped to handle. And quite frankly, it's a silent killer. So today, we're going to talk about the one thing that you absolutely can't be afraid of in sales. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so you guys know how I like to roll. Maybe it's that New York in me, but I really like to get right down to business. So today we're going to be talking about this like one thing that you can't be afraid of in sales. Now, when you hear what it is, you're going to be inclined to say, duh. And you have to give me a chance and hear me out here because I'm going to get very specific. So you ready? Like, I'm just going to get rid of all the mystery. Now, if I were to say to you, well, the one thing in sales that you can't be afraid of is rejection, you'd say, duh, and you'd get the hell out of here. You guys know that you would haul ass right out of here and go, like, do something else with your time. But what I really want to talk about is a form of rejection that a lot of us in sales allow like to fester like within us and allow ourselves to become obsessed with. And before I actually like get incredibly specific, right? I feel like I'm beating around the bush, but when you hear why, you'll probably agree with me. I'm about to like use some really colorful language today, and not that like that's anything new to the podcast, but just in case, like I always think, oh man, like what if like a sales manager is listening like with their sales team and like 15 seconds into it, I'm dropping the S-bomb and all this kind of stuff. So I just want to like remind you, if bad language like offend you, in general, you're not going to want to listen to my podcast. And today, you're certainly not going to want to. I'm not going to get like really, really bad with like the F curse or whatever it is, but I am going to get a little bit colorful. So here's where I want to go with this. The one thing that you can't be afraid of in sales is a form of rejection that I like to refer to as the dicky comment. All right, that's the technical word for it. I believe that like, you know, like therapists like throughout the world refer to it as the dicky comment. They might even refer to it as the dickish comment. I'm not sure, but that's really like where I'm going with this. Like, but if I said to you like rejection, go, oh shit, you know, come on. Another guy's talking about that. Like, what's next, Castain? You're going to tell us how we have to add value and be a trusted advisor and a true consultant? No. But I'm here to tell you that the thing that becomes a silent killer to salespeople is allowing your body armor to be removed and allow a dicky comment to take you down. So let us now go back in time. We're going to take a little trip down memory lane because, like, you know, your Uncle Paul here is going to be 53 years old, man, and like, at the end of June, by the way. And what happens is, as you start getting over like 40, like you love to tell all these stories about back in the day. And like, what the hell? I'm going to tell you a story about back in the day that almost bankrupted my family. I remember when I first started cold calling. I mean, this is like way back, like before many of you were even born. And by the way, I had hair back then. Swear to God, I had hair, a full head of it, man. It's like I thought the baldness thing was going to like skip a generation with me, but, you know, like what can I say? It didn't. So way back when, like I'm talking like mid-80s type of stuff, and I called up someone, and this asshole decided to, like, didn't say not interested, didn't give me a blow off, certainly wasn't polite. Instead, they decided to be a full-fledged card-carrying dick. And what they did was, they said to me, what, are you going down a list? And I didn't know how to, like, handle that. And back then, because I didn't have a lot of experience, I mean, I read a lot of books and people said, well, people say not interested, you say this. If people say I have a supplier, you say that. If somebody says send me some information, well, you can say these three things, right? I was very good at that. But the one thing, and even to some extent to this day, I still can get a little bit tripped up, I just don't know how to handle stupid. Right? I mean, when somebody says something like that, it just wasn't in my playbook. And now here's the dangerous thing. The call ended in disaster. I didn't know what to say to that. And it really bothered me. Like, I really allowed it to get to me as if this guy knew where I lived, showed up in the car, and like beat the shit out of me, and then gave me a wedgie in front of my wife and just like made me feel like his bitch or something. That's how I felt. And I allowed it to get to me. And like I remember when I started really like finding my balls in sales and like when they dropped. And it was like probably, unfortunately, about a year or two after that. And I waited. Like I was like, you know, the poster boy for call reluctance after that. I was, I don't want another call like that. People out here in New York, man, they're brutal. And I remember, like, I was going out of my way to call other parts of the country where I felt they were nicer and all this other kind of, you know, and it was bad, man. And, like, it got in my way of making money. I mean, thank God at that point in time, I had a lot of existing accounts, and I did the mistake that a lot of people and a lot of you guys have made too. And what, you know, like if you're afraid of hunting for new business, what do? You farm the hell out of your account. So I started going to a farming mode. But I remember when I kind of found my balls, and it was a few years later. And I remember thinking, like, wow, if somebody said that to me today, like, what are you doing? Going down a list. Now, I wouldn't actually say this, folks, but sometimes like your self-talk, you know, it has to be in a language that you're used to speaking. If I were face to face with somebody and not on a phone and somebody said something stupid to me, I go back. Seriously, I do. I don't like a bully. I don't like a wise ass. I maintain that the average person, you know, who decides to be an asshole is an asshole because they can, because they don't have enough people that go back at them, because the average person doesn't want a confrontation. My problem years ago is that I enjoyed that confrontation, and you know, because I didn't want to feel like a victim and feel like I did when that guy, what are you going down a list? And I remember thinking to myself, wow, man, how things have changed. Like if somebody said that to me now and they said, what are you going down a list? I would say, no list. I saw your name, you know, like on the bathroom wall, and instead of calling you for a good time, I thought I'd actually try to sell you some shit, you know. Or I remember thinking, like, you know, somebody said that to me today, like, what are you going down a list or whatever it is? Like, I said, like, I'd probably want to say to them, like, what the F do you care? Who gives a shit where I got your name? Like, I got it off a list. Or, like, you know, the hand of God came down and said, Uncle Paul, call this shithead. He needs your guidance. He's an idiot. His parents were brother and sister. I mean, like, who gives a shit how I came about that, like how that call started? And of course I never said any of those things, but in those moments when I was kind of talking to myself like that, my confidence came back. And you know, I realized that this wasn't worth me getting in the way of helping people, which I really believe that what I've always sold has helped someone. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be selling it. And I sure as hell wasn't going to let it get in the way of me feeding my family. So let us now fast forward a little bit, okay? When I decided to start Castain Training Systems back in 2011, and 2011, what happened was, in fact, this is now our seventh year in business. And what happened was, prior to that on LinkedIn, I always gave. I just gave unconditionally without a scorecard. Big advocate. If you had known me back then, and some of you go way back with me, and if you had known me back then, you know that I was a big advocate of you should give. And I remember when I decided, hey, you know, I wanna go in business for myself. I wanna train people. I want to coach sales reps. I want to help those who are struggling get to a higher level. I want to help sales leadership retain more of their employees and reduce their, you know, their turnover costs. And I want to get out on the stage and address entire sales forces at their annual kickoff meetings and stuff. I remember when I got to that point, I said, you know what? I've been building this incredible network on LinkedIn forever. I've been giving people free stuff. Like once a month, I was sending people like a free resource. And back then, man, I found this really cool search engine that was designed for just exclusively for social media. I sent that along to people. I sent along apps. I remember like when Evernote first came about, like I'm talking like within weeks of it launching, I sent it out to everybody. Hey, there's this really cool free app. You should check it out. So it was giving. I even wrote free PDFs to people. I put out free guides on how to have better sales meetings. All of this, no charge. So I said, you know what? I'm gonna be a little selfish and I'm gonna send out an email to everybody. So I sent out an email to everybody on LinkedIn and I said, forgive me for being selfish. Usually you guys know the deal. I'm all about giving. Today I've got to be selfish. Here's why. Decided to start my business. Here are the areas that we're gonna be helping people. And, you know, if either you know of someone like, you know, like your boss or your company or you that could use, you know, my services or whatever, or if you know someone else in your network, whatever, would you please, you know, pass along my information or facilitate an introduction? I'd really appreciate it. And so let me tell you the negative side of this first, because that's what I chose to focus on. And this is where you're going to start to see where this is truly a very dangerous thing and a silent killer. So I got this one response from someone, and I kid around about it today, but I promise you at the time, I didn't think it was anything near funny. I took it to heart. I was offended by the person's statement. And the person, basically the gist of their email was, how dare you? Was how dare you? And again, I told you my language is going to be colorful today. Let me tell you the way this guy acted. He acted like a husband who came home and like caught me in bed with his wife. Like that kind of offended. Like, how dare you? You should never do that on LinkedIn. It's like, holy shit already. And back then, like, it really bothered me. Now, I harped on that, man. I thought about it. And I was like, you know what? You know, maybe I shouldn't be doing that on LinkedIn. And for 2 years after that, I never did anything that was salesy. And in 2013, I hit a really dangerous part of my business. I just wasn't getting enough of, like, you know, the inbound leads coming in. I mean, I've always picked up a phone. Many of you know that, you know, I'm a big advocate of direct mail. You receive my little notes in the mail and my direct mail pieces for Castain training systems. Big advocate of those things. But like the LinkedIn stuff just wasn't coming in. And what I found was I had a bunch of people who were taking, and you know, whether or not like we want to sit here and blame them, a bunch of cheap bastards didn't want to hire me. I take full responsibility for that, because how do you know that you can buy something from someone unless they put it out there that they're not a not-for-profit. They are a business. You know, you're not sitting around all day, right? Like, you listen to my podcast now. You're not sitting there as you listen to this saying, I love this guy, Paul. Like, I love his personality and that New York shit that he's got going on and, you know, his, like, no bullshit attitude. I love all. How could I buy something from him? It doesn't work that way. That's not the thought process. But here's where it got dangerous. I allowed that to get in the way and allowed me to like second guess my efforts. And for 2 years, I missed out on a lot of opportunities and my business almost went under. So now let's go back again to the story. I gave you the shitty side of this story on purpose because that was my thought process. You could see I was harping on the negative. Never once did I focus on the positive side of this. And here's the positive side of it. And this is like the God's honest truth. Those of you who've been following me a while, you will see on yoursalesplaybook.com, on my blog, if you Google, not Google, if you do a search on my blog, 45 new accounts in 30 days, you'll probably find 7 or 8 blog posts that I've written since 2011 talking about the good side of this. The good side of this was that inside of 30 days of sending out that email, what happened was is I landed 45 new accounts right from LinkedIn. And, you know, that's what happened. I mean, seriously, 45 new accounts. I always tell people, hey, you know, of that 30 of them were coaching clients, 15 were sizable corporate deals. Like one of them was a six-figure deal. All from having the balls to say, hey, everyone, you know, here's something that I do. Here's how I help people. You know, let me know if I could be of service. But instead of focusing on that and the fact that I was able to launch my business with probably, geez, I probably launched with $200,000 worth of business, I mean, which is sizable for somebody coming right out of the gate in a really competitive industry, sales training. And like I launched with that. And instead of me focusing on that and continue as like Tom Hopkins used to say, when you hit pay dirt, keep digging. I stopped digging because of one person. I didn't pay attention to the 45 other people who said, oh my God, this was perfect timing. I didn't pay attention to the fact that I had 30 coaching clients at the end of, you know, a month. I didn't pay attention to the fact that I had 15 corporate clients and one of them a six-figure deal. Because, you know, I was too busy focusing on one person who hurt your Uncle Paul's widow feelings. Now, let's fast forward one more time. And I promise you, this is going to continue to go somewhere, this conversation. So, like, as if we're having a conversation. I mean, who are we kidding? You're listening to me, and I'm talking. I mean, you're not talking to me. And if you're talking to me, man, that, like, how effed up is that? Because, like, I'm not there. I can't hear you. But the final example, and what inspired me to do, like, use this as the topic today, is if we fast forward again to last week, I was doing something that I've done since 2010 with my LinkedIn network. And if you're connected with me on LinkedIn, in fact, you know, just very quickly, I want to give you guys a quick homework assignment. If you're driving in the car, by all means, don't do this. But, you know, make a little note to self either way that when you can safely do it, look me up on LinkedIn, Paul Castain, and send me an invite and let's connect. Because then you could see a lot of these things that I'm talking about. And it's a great way for you to learn by seeing the examples that hopefully I'm trying to put out there for you guys. And so what one of the things that I preach is that like every 4 to 6 weeks, you send out some kind of a resource to your network. The reason why you need to do this is there's a lot. And one of the reasons is that, well, you want to stay in touch. Most people, I mean, I want you to think about this. I did get into this last week on the podcast. The average person, after they send you an invite, does nothing. There's two extremes to LinkedIn. There's the one extreme that connects with you, and 30 seconds later, you're getting a sales pitch. And then there's the vast majority, I would say 90 to 95% of the people out there who send you an invite, you accept, and they do nothing. Not even a thanks for connecting, and no form of keeping in touch after that. So what's nice about the resource, sending it to them through LinkedIn, is that it keeps you in touch. It can be an icebreaker. And people always talk about, well, you have to provide value. And this is one of the ways that you provide value, by actually sending along something useful that isn't salesy by nature. And so I was sending out a resource. Now, I sent out, and I thought it was a pretty cool resource, I sent out to everyone in my LinkedIn network a suggestion that you should play matchmaker with people on LinkedIn. Introduce people who need to know each other. And I said, and by the way, here's a simple template that I use, and I've been using it for years, and I get almost 100% response rate. People don't get mad at you on LinkedIn for helping them make money or helping them find something useful. So I just make it my mission to play matchmaker and get people together that need to know each other. And I said, here's the template that I use. Now, what I did at the end of that email is, and it's a tactic that I teach in my LinkedIn course, by the way, or my LinkedIn webinar. And I call it like the by the way approach. and you're giving them something, and then at the end, you know, give them like a little FYI. Hey, by the way, if you found value in this, and this is exactly what I said, by the way, if you found value in this, come and join us on Thursday, May 3rd, because we're going to be doing a webinar, and we're going to be talking about this, and I've got 10 templates for you, you know, in addition to this one that you just got. And those of you who listen to my podcast, do you notice how I do the by the way approach there at the end after I've given you something? I kind of then do, hey, by the way, we've got a webinar coming up on this very topic. We're going to be talking about it. At the end of each one of my blog posts, if you found value in this, come join us on May 3rd for our LinkedIn webinar. There is nothing wrong in doing that. And this person, I think they were having a really bad day. They sent me, and remember I said to you, you know, the dicky remark, right? They made the dicky remark. They sent me an email that was just really stupid. I mean, it was, you know, abusive, and it was stupid. And now, there would have been a time, probably not all that long ago, that I would have enjoyed going back at someone that I thought was being a bully. I mean, you guys have to forgive me, but because I've been in sales so long, I think about you guys that haven't been in sales as long as I have. And I think about how there's so many people in sales that have to swallow a whole mess of shit from people. And I really don't like people that go around stepping on other people. But, you know, there's no money in a conversation where I'm putting somebody in their place. And I really don't want to talk. I mean, do you really think I'm going to put them in their place? Oh, you're 100% right. Let me buy, you know, your coaching program from you. It's not going to go anywhere. So to me, I want to exit that conversation as quickly as I can. And yes, I was probably a little more sarcastic than I should have been. I think I said, look, sounds like you're having a bad day. I'll let you get back to it. Take care. And then I just dropped the guy like a bad habit from my network. I'm not going to court rude people. I just, you know, I just have no need for it. But here's the thing. This thing kind of showed its ugly face again. After I sent that email and got rid of the guy, I started obsessing over it. And I'm like, wow, what a dick. And I'm thinking about that. And I remember, you know, my wife had gotten home early from work on, I don't know if it was Friday or Thursday or whatever it was that this happened. And, you know, I came downstairs. I was just in the mood like for an iced tea, you know, because that's one of the things that I think you have to do when you have a bad encounter is, yeah, you have to get right back in the saddle, as they would say. And, but, you know, sometimes I think you also have to just like walk away for a few minutes and collect your thoughts. And I always found that movement, you know, it can create energy and you know, like your brain releases the endorphins and you get that natural high and everything else. And so, like, I walk downstairs making a nice tea and I'm like, you know, tell my wife about this. And then I'm realizing, man, I'm like going on and on, like a little bit too much about, like, who gives a shit? This guy isn't thinking about me. He's not sitting there saying, you know, I wonder how Paul feels right now. Or, boy, he sure showed me with his, you know, his arrogant response to whatever it is. I mean, he's moving on. He's not thinking about this. And then I realized that I am making no money right now. I mean, I hate to be the whore here, the sales whore, but I'm making no money thinking about this. It's keeping me from doing something else. And I was starting to second guess my efforts. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, is that like, you know, like, should I be doing this? Like, maybe is everybody else being polite with me? And I'm like, I'm being a dick here and nobody's telling me. And this guy actually, you know, is speaking for the mass majority, whatever. And it caused me to hesitate for a little while. But, you know, you remember before when I said to you that how I let the remark of one person back in 2011, like, keep me from doing something for 2 years, and I let the remark of one person like overshadow the 45 people who bought from me that ended up turning into over $200,000 in revenue from me. I let that one asshole take me down for 2 years. Well, it's the same thing. Like when I sent out that resource on LinkedIn, at that point I had sent out about 5,000 of those emails, and you know, one person out of 5,000 was an idiot. But let me tell you the numbers from my efforts that day and how this started getting in the way. Of the 5,000 people that I reached out to, 25 people immediately enrolled in my webinar at $99 a piece. One person bought an $1,800 coaching program that I have. Now, it wasn't just all like Paul sent it, and lo and behold, there was money in my bank account. Some of these, I had some back and forth. I had conversations. This coaching person said, hey, can we get on a call? You know, I'm in need of a coach. You happen to show up at the right time. Haven't you guys had that? You call somebody up, and they're like, wow, like, how did you know? Like, we were just talking about this. Those are the best damn calls in the world, and they should overshadow the shit that we have to deal with. But also, there's more. Somebody booked a keynote speech with me. That's several thousand dollars. So, I mean, like, when you add up all these things, just from those five, like, thousand emails that I sent out, it was probably, you know, over $10,000 that came in as a result of that. But was I thinking, but you made $10,000? No, I was letting the remark of one asshole start to take me down. Also, too, let's just get this away from money for a minute, because I don't want to make it all about money. Of those 5,000 that I sent out, I had so many cool little rounds of chit-chat with people. It was a great icebreaker. I had so many people that were sending me thank yous and saying how much they value getting these things. And just like, even like, I had somebody who noticed on my profile that, you know, I was telling my story, and I was telling how, you know, I had lost everything and you know, built my life back in the 90s. And it took me like a decade to kind of, you know, get things back on track and build a better life for my family and stuff. And this person didn't know that. And the person said, boy, that hit home with me, Paul. And, you know, I went through it too. In fact, I'm kind of going through it, and you kind of showed me that there's hope. And, you know, like, I changed my thinking. And I can't say that that was the moment that I changed my thinking, because I've done this all along, but I wasn't smart enough to kind of make this a play in my playbook. And I want you to do this too. And here's the thing. You can't let one remark kill your momentum or deny you your right to help other people with your solution, or deny you the life that you aspire to live. My response now to people who want to say, you know, who want to engage in a dicky comment in my direction is screw you. I don't say it to them, by the way. Now, you might be saying, oh man, I can't say that to them. No, don't. I don't say it to them. But, you know, my remark is almost my attitude, excuse me, is more like a how dare you. I mean, you know, like, I'm, like, to myself, I'm saying, yeah, screw you. Do you think one lame attempt at discouraging me is going to stop me? Screw yourself. Get bent. Do you think that you're going to stop me from picking up that phone today and calling other people that desperately need, like to make their quota, and that need to save their jobs and need to make more money and be able to put their kids through college? Do you think that you're going to deny me my ability to put my kids through college or live the life that I feel I deserve to have? F that. That isn't going to happen. Now, remember, I'm not saying this to them, but I am acting as if somebody is coming over and wanting to take my money from me. And I don't mind if you don't like my approach when I call you or when I reach out on LinkedIn. And, you know, that's fine. And if there's a learning opportunity in there for me, I'm going to take it. But I'm not going to court an asshole. I'm just not. I need to rid myself of them quickly, the way you do. But I can't let that interaction get in the way of other things. And you know what's funny? And I think I did a blog post on this, or maybe it was a podcast a few years ago. But there is this guy on LinkedIn, and I can't remember his name for the life of me. And I think he was one of the early employees over at Facebook. He got fired on Facebook, and he went on and he like did great things, man. He's got like a number of really, really well-known websites and businesses. He's worth a few million dollars, this guy, all these things. And I remember he was saying about this book that he had written, and he was talking about Amazon reviews. And he was saying, he said, you can't let the one stupid comment that you get on there on the review get in the way of the 91 incredible comments about how you change someone's life and how you help them and stuff. And you guys have to be the same way. And if I could offer a little suggestion to you, there is a little trick that I do that keeps me focused on the bigger picture. And what I do, and it's been a long time since I've talked about it here, is I have a collage picture frame on my desk. And it has pictures of all the things that I'm working for, pardon me, in my life. And some of them to you guys are going to seem like warm and fuzzy, but I promise you, if you make money because of a warm and fuzzy thing, the IRS doesn't discount for that. It's still revenue. I know it's crazy, right? It still counts as revenue, even though you were, you know, like a wuss and you had to go like all warm and fuzzy. But I have a picture of me and my wife, Laura, and my three kids. And it was on a trip that we had taken a few years ago to a resort. And that trip was a result of, you know, my hard work. And, you know, of course, my wife's hard work, too. But, like, one of the goals I had set for myself is that we hit a certain revenue milestone. We were going to go away to this resort in the Adirondacks. So we went away, and we went there. And I see that picture, and it keeps me focused on the future. So if I'm having a bad day, or if I, again, I am a victim of a dickish remark, I look at that and I say, that remark was a speed bump. It's not, you know, any way, shape, or form, the whole story. Nothing is going to deny me of those moments with my family that can only come by me bringing home the bacon and my wife bringing home the bacon. But I also have other pictures on there. I have a picture of whatever the latest guitar is that I want to buy. I've been a guitarist for a long time. I have several. So I have a picture of the guitar that I want to buy. I also have a picture of logos of the charities that I support, because it's not all about selfishness. It's about me being able to give to St. Jude and to the Cancer Society and, you know, to Memorial Sloan Kettering, you know, things that are near and dear to me. So I have that there as well. But I have other pictures in there. But the one that really, like, gets me immediately back into the proper, like, psychological state is a picture of my family and I on the very first day that we walked through the gates at Disney World in 2006. That was the beginning of, I don't know if it was like a 13 or 15 day trip. And that trip symbolizes something that many of you might not have any idea about me. When I lost everything I had back in 1995, a friend of the family who was a multimillionaire came to visit me. And the joke I always tell, forgive me for the bad joke, is he wasn't coming to visit me with money to bail me out of the shithole that I dug myself into. By the way, 60 grand in debt, two cars repossessed, and I was feeling like a grade A piece of shit. I really did. As a man, I felt like I failed my family. I lost my business. By the way, you want to add some more emotional baggage into the equation? It was a business that I had several years earlier inherited from my father, so I felt like I let him down. Like, all these things going on. And he said to me, you know, Paul, he gave me something better than money. And he said, you know, he gave me hope. And he said, it's been a long time since I've heard about you talking about how someday you want to take your family to Disney. And I said, well, it's been a long time because I lost everything. It's not the kind of thing you think of when you're $60,000 in debt and you have creditors calling up, you know, threatening you and you know, I'm working nights now, not seeing my kids. And he said, that's the best time to be thinking about the future and giving yourself something to look forward to. So he recommended that I take a picture of the Magic Kingdom, and I put it on my desk. And I did back then. And I remember when I was working nights and I felt like I couldn't, I was working this 12-hour shift from 8 o'clock at night till 8 a.m. in the morning. There was times because of lack of sleep. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but when you have a lack of sleep, it can really, really F with your emotions. And I remember sometimes just like crying, not in front of people, man. Jeez, I couldn't imagine doing that. But like on my own, and I'm like, I didn't know why I was crying. It was like, you know, part of it, I guess, was depression. But, you know, like it was like lack of sleep, man, 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. in the morning. And, you know, as a man, I kind of felt like I'm out of the house in the middle of the night, and my wife and my young children, I'm not there to protect me. All this stupid shit going on in my head. And, but when I felt like I couldn't go on anymore, I would look at that picture, and I would picture my family in front of it. And, you know, and it would give me a little bit of strength to go on. And then when I stopped feeling sorry for myself and I got out of the night job and I went back into sales, I started back then, back in sales, like part two of sales, Castaigne's selling career. I'll never forget working for this janitorial franchise company, and base salary was $19,000. And, you know, people would hang up on me, all kinds of stuff. I would look at that picture, and I would picture, you know, my little girl dressed as a princess, and I would picture, you know, all of us with these big smiles. And I began to use all the senses, and I would picture like what the smell of popcorn and the sound of children's laughter, and picturing that look of pride on my face when I said, screw you, world, I did it. You didn't step on me. I got up and I said, it's my turn, bitch, and I headbutted life. And I turned that 19 grand into, I think it was like 81 or 82,000 my first year in that sales role. Then I was promoted, and I think the next year was like 150,000, and I was back, and I never looked back, and I paid off all the debt and everything. But it took a while, repairing my credit and all this other stuff. And but every time somebody would hang up on me or something, like, how about that deal that was a sure thing, and then all of a sudden, for some stupid reason, they pull out. And I would look at that picture and I would say, doesn't matter. Nobody's going to deny you of that Castaigne. You are getting your family there. So in 2006, we went through the gates of Disney for real, even though mentally I'd been through 20,000 times without paying them a dime, by the way. I feel like I owe them probably $500,000 at this point for all the free trips. But the reason why that picture is still in my picture collage is it because it reminds me that if I could take a point of my life when I was at the lowest point and set a goal and get my family into Disney and do a dream vacation that, by the way, my youngest is now almost 21 years old. Years later, they still talk about that trip. And it's something that makes me happy. So today, I look at that picture when I'm having a bad day. The other day, I'm starting to have a bad day, starting to hesitate, question, you know, if I should continue and stay the course. And I looked at that picture and I said, screw you, man. Life, you think you're going to kick your Uncle Paul down and like step on me or whatever it is. When I get up, I'm going to beat the shit out of a few people here. And that's how I operate. And that's what keeps me going. And maybe it's something that'll help you as well. But really, my message to you today is simple. People are going to say stupid things to you. Don't let it get to you. And yeah, I don't want to be another person saying you have to have a thick skin in sales. I want to be the guy who gives you, you know, some very specific things. It's not so much having a thick skin in sales. It's allowing a comment to make you second guess your efforts. And I think there's nothing wrong in a momentary second guess of it, because when you're hearing the same thing from a lot of people, maybe you are being offensive. Maybe you're the one being the dick and they're responding in kind. So you have to be willing to kind of let get rid of the ego for a minute and have that kind of inner dialogue. But more often than not, it's just one person that you encountered that you're allowing to keep you from picking up the phone or doing, you know, your good work on LinkedIn or doing other things that you're doing. And like I said before, you don't ever let one person, person who's just like evil, get in the way of the 30 other people who are kind to you or the 5,000 other people who are kind to you. And certainly you don't let it get in the way of you helping other people and denying you of your God-given right to have the life that you truly deserve. So that's kind of it today, folks. I'm sorry if we got into a little rah-rah, but I think it's something that is a very serious thing in sales, because it really is a silent killer. It's not something that we're sitting around and we're aware of because we're busy complaining about it, or we're using it as our excuse not to make more calls or do some of the good work that we're doing. Very quickly, before you guys go, I wanted to give you a final reminder that if you want to join us for our LinkedIn webinar, and the LinkedIn webinar that I'm going to be doing, I do it differently than a lot of other people. There are people out there that they want to talk to you like forever about your profile. I don't waste time on that shit. And the reason why I don't waste time on it, because right now, if you Google like LinkedIn profile tips, you're going to probably find 5,000 free articles you can read. I don't think that the world needs another like LinkedIn profile lecture. It is an important thing to have a strong profile, but to me, my money's really on the person who knows how to interact with people, who has a communication plan. Our focus is going to be on what do you do step by step from the moment you connect with someone to the moment you want to move it off the computer screen and into like a live conversation, a meeting, a cup of coffee, and how do you transition further into a client, into referrals and warm intros. So we're going to be talking about that. No, you don't have to have a paid LinkedIn account. I don't have a premium account. Not because I'm cheap, but because I can get everything that I want by doing what I'm doing right now. I'm not going to tell you to go out and get LinkedIn Navigator. I'm sure as hell not going to tell you to like become a professional writer and put out like all this content. I do it, but you certainly don't. The stuff I'm going to be teaching is not going to be about content. It's going to be about step-by-step a communication plan. And I'm also going to be giving you guys the 10 templates that I use on LinkedIn. These are the actual templates that I use to keep things moving along and nurture this network that I've been able to build. Oh, final thing too that I want to tell you. Many of you might be saying, yeah, Paul, but you do well on LinkedIn because you have a billion, you know, followers. No, I don't. I have 7,000 followers on LinkedIn, and I have about 52, actually no, I have 5,000 connections. That's it. I don't have a bunch. I'm definitely not one of the cool kids on LinkedIn that you see that everybody's like leaving 30 comments and 50 comments and 200 comments. I don't put up videos on LinkedIn. I focus my time, and I will be, by the way. I'm going to be doing my first video this week, but my focus is actually on, imagine this, like the audacity of Castain. My focus is on the human interaction. So I'm putting things out there for people to prove like my expertise and demonstrate it. But the bulk of what I'm doing and the bulk of what I teach is on a one-on-one basis. How do we take, you know, Jane Jones and move her from that moment where we said hello to that moment where like the right time to hit Jane up for possibly buying your widget from you? So if this is of interest to you, I want you to go by yoursalesplaybook.com/LinkedIn. And that's all lowercase. yoursalesplaybook.com/LinkedIn. It takes place this Thursday, May 3rd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. If you can't make it and join us live, I want you to sign up anyway, because then I can still send you the webinar replay, which will be available Thursday afternoon, about an hour after we finish. And you'll get all the templates and all the goodies that I'm going to send. Isn't like technology cool that way? So again, yoursalesplaybook.com/LinkedIn. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. To sign up for our free sales tips, visit yoursalesplaybook.com/salestips.